Miller versus Ford Motor Company. Mr. Judge.
If it please the court, my name is Bob Hodge, appearing on behalf of Gary Miller. On the outset, Your Honor, let me say that for peculiar reasons, the record in this case is incomplete. The central issue in this case is what this mysterious ERAM, IRAM...
Well, why didn't you get this into the record? I don't understand.
Because it was in the district court, it was never formally was made part of the record.
Why did you ask the judge obviously had a copy, right?
Judge apparently had a copy.
So why didn't you say to the judge, look, we'd like to see that too, so could you put it in the record? I mean, ordinarily when judges obtain, you know, ask for evidence to help them decide the case, the evidence goes into the record.
I understand, but I didn't represent the plaintiff in the district court, Judge. He was without counsel. Quite frankly, I'm embarrassed. I should have caught it sooner and made a motion to supplement the record. I intend to do so at after these proceedings are done here today. But I think the what's contained in the sections that I'm going to propose the court to accept as part of the record are pretty, you know, it's a solid lot of mysteries in this case. But the court is certainly capable of determining whether or not these documents.
But are you saying that the Ford Motor all the Ford Motor Company's employees have tenure?
No. These are a special class of employees. These are the employees who are in between the management sector and the collective bargaining sector. These are general salary employees who are both administrators and.
No, I understand. The workers covered by collective bargaining do have a form of tenure. But Ford must have tens or hundreds of thousands of these salaried employees, and your suggestion is they're all tenured.
No, my suggestion is that they can only be terminated for just cause.
That's tenure.
Well, okay.
Right? You don't always terminate a tenured employee.
Oh, you can also lay off you can lay off a tenured employee, so it's not really a tenure situation as it would be understood.
That's
in
what
academia.
Tenure is. Tenure means you can only be fired for cause, or you can be laid off if there's no work for you to do.
Okay, well, I
don't. University can terminate a department.
What the evidence in this case suggests, in the record we have now.
The argument you're making applies to all Ford salaried employees.
That's correct, and that's what the summary.
Everyone has assumed that, you know, salaried employees in the United States, they don't work for the government or university or something like that. They're employees at will.
That's correct, but there's evidence in this case we suggest that there is a material dispute as to whether or not, or genuine dispute as to whether or not there actually was a just cause term in these general salaried employees' contracts. They started off as at will employees, no question about that, but the summary we have in the record, and the court can decide after it receives the other evidence, but suggest strongly that this is an additional term. The summary we have here suggests that both the...
I think it's a little late for you to be presenting evidence.
I totally
I'm
agree.
Supposed to go in at the district court.
I understand, but this is, as a court look at the docket sheet,
it's too late.
Well, if
there
had been
put
counsel,
in evidence at the appellate level, you put it into trial.
This evidence was reviewed by the district judge, Your Honor. This is evidence which is not plaintiff's or defendant's evidence, I suggest. It's court's evidence.
It's not part of the record, though.
It was reviewed by the district judge and was relied upon by the district judge in her opinion. So it's in the record in some respects. I don't know if what should have happened is that counsel for the plaintiff should have attached or made a motion to supplement his summary judgment appendix to include this evidence, but that didn't happen because there was no counsel. And
what's the strongest excerpt from this mysterious manual that you think creates a just cause?
It clearly says there has to be misconduct of one sort or another.
I'm asking you for some specific reference.
Well, in the brief, it's the summary is quoted to pages 28 and 29. Salary employees, last paragraph, must comply with all standards of conduct. Misconduct must have an adverse impact on the company.
I don't understand with all these ellipses what's going on.
The document's in the appendix, Your Honor. I don't have a copy in front of me, but it's a two-page document.
There's obviously something missing between those two sentences.
I think, Your Honor, if I could suggest it, if we have the motion to for it to supplement the record is allowed, this problem will go away. The court will have before it plenty of language that can will indicate what the just what the position of the salary employees was.
On this just cause, you know, as I understand it, you're trying to say that Ford modified the employment relationship because he was required to stay in a union, maintain his union membership. But his union membership didn't add a just cause term in the most recent employment, did it?
No.
Because he was no longer a member of any union at the time of the termination.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. He started over again when he came to Chicago as an at-will employee. But our suggestion is that the contract after that employment was modified by these regulations, but also under the one of the cases we cite in the brief, if I can describe it as the human resources culture that is expressed in the declarations, which the district court didn't address at all, which are at best contradictory and confused on the issue as what the standards were for imposing discipline and especially termination for a salaried employee.
So you're saying these IRM provisions that you cited, if we were to allow that in the record, would indicate that he was covered then for just
cause? Yes, it would indicate that the skeletal summary we have now, which Judge Posner referred to, would flesh it out and give the details. And if I may, in my view, or I would urge the view that it would support what's contained in the summary. The court doesn't need argument at that point. The court can read that document. It's only a 20-page document, or it's 20 pages. You don't have to read all of it, but it will straighten that matter out. The district judge is to be commended for asking the document be brought before her. She made this entry number 59 in the docket sheet after the summary judgment motion was filed by the defendant, and when. The plaintiff was not represented by counsel, so...
Now, how did she misinterpret this document?
In two respects, Your Honor. First, she pointed out, as Judge Williams did, that there was an initial at-will document. When Mr. Miller signed out in Michigan, he signed it in standard form.
This is in 72.
This is in 72, correct. And she said, well, that can't be true because this document says he's an at-will employee. That, we suggest, misses the modification argument, which is that the regulations modify his employment relationship with Ford, and it suggests that
Is it your position that any at-will employee who then is handed, let's say, a handbook that gives a code of conduct for the employer, and if you violate it, you're subject to dismissal, converts the at-will status by implication to a tenured situation?
No, only under the standards of the Doudout, I can't pronounce the name of the case, but the case of the leading Illinois case, which states there has to be a clear expression or a clear statement of this modification.
Well, do we have in this document that you suggest is critical, what is the clear statement in there of the conversion of status, let's say?
That will employment says you can be terminated for good reason, bad reason, no reason at all. This document, I would suggest, eliminates the bad reason and the no reason at all component.
Where does it eliminate the bad reason? That's my question.
We're talking about a document not in your record, not in the record at this point.
So you don't know what's in it.
I have it right here on my folder here.
Could you give us the page then and paragraph? If we were to admit this, it would be helpful to have that specific.
Well, I can present that to the motion if you can, Your Honor. Somebody wants you to go through. But the second argument of the district judge was that the second argument was that there was a disclaimer in the document that's not in the record. That's why I'm embarrassed here again. But the evidence in the case suggests that the disclaimer was not part of the rules and regulations that were disseminated to Mr. Miller and his other GSR people. This is not like a handbook case where you walk in and you're handed a employee handbook. This is a case where the rules and regulations are kept in the human resources office basically under lock and key. There's a provision that says so it's not a handbook situation, and the district court mischaracterized, we suggest what is the effect of disclaimer is conspicuousness. I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Did you say under lock and key, you mean Miller didn't see it?
No, I didn't see it, no.
Well, how then was any contractual obligation to him created?
Well, he did not see the provision, the disclaimer provision. He saw it administered. The disciplinary and termination provisions. Those provisions he did see.
So he had the manual?
He didn't have it at home. He couldn't take it home at night. He didn't have a copy after he was terminated. But he had he used it in his work. He was both a employee and also
right,
a supervisor.
Right, he had to use it with the other employees.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Oh, okay, I understand. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Bledsoe?
My honors, I'm Stephen Bledsoe for Ford Motor Company.
It's pretty ludicrous having this case turn on the content of a document which was not made a part of the record.
Your Honor, I'd absolutely agree. We've been waiting for years for Mr. Miller to ever produce
any
document.
Why did you put it in? I mean, it's your document.
Well, Your Honor, here's what happened. And I filed a motion for summary judgment. I put in, of course, our contention is there are no portions of the IRAM or ERAM that would that change his at-will employment portion. I inserted the disclaimer. Judge Bucklow, sua sponte, ordered production of the entire three-volume IRAM-ERAM, both to the court and to Mr. Miller, which was provided at the time. Mr. Miller, twice after he was provided with that entire document, filed a supplement to his response to Ford's motion for summary judgment, which Judge Bucklow allowed him to do. On neither of those two occasions did he ever take a portion of the IRAM DRAM which he'd been provided and attach it to his supplement. On top of that, the suggestion that if the record had come up would now somehow be supplemented, the decision would change is just wrong. I mean, Judge Bucklow had it, and as is indicated in her opinion, thoroughly reviewed. I'll quote Judge Bucklow, after a thorough review of Ford's handbook and statement of policy, specifically the IRAM, Judge Bucklow was unable to find any promises which meet the test of enforceability. Judge Bucklow goes on to say, at best, the document contains vague statements of intention which fall far short of the language found by other courts to create a contract. So we're not talking about simply, geez, if he'd had this document, he would win. No, he not only had the document, Judge Bucklow had the document, reviewed the document, and ruled.
But a solid review of interpretation of a written contract is normally de novo. So, and I don't know how we can review this without a contract.
Well, Your Honor, it certainly isn't Ford's burden to produce provisions which it doesn't believe change the employment or will status. I mean, we produced all the provisions that we believe change the employment or will status.
Yeah, but it would certainly make our job easier if we had it. Then we could see whether we agree with what you say or not. I mean, it's not a situation of you trying to prove the plaintiff's case for the plaintiff. It's just a question of making the record complete so we can have a context in which to review your argument and to assess the terms of the contract.
Your Honor, I agree and I understand what you're saying. The reason, of course, Ford simply didn't produce the entire document at the time was because the IRAM ERAM, as I indicated, I mean, if I stack the papers up and
certainly there got to be certain sections that relate to employment.
Your Honor, I would like to know what they are. I've been waiting for years to know what they are, and that's my point. The document was provided to the court and to Mr. Miller. Mr. Miller twice supplemented his opposition to our summary judgment motion after receiving the document, but he still didn't produce anything from the document.
That was when he was unrepresented?
At that particular time, he was unrepresented. Although, I would point out for the record, he started this case represented. So this is not a situation where Mr. Miller began the case unrepresented and was without guidance. His counsel, who was very familiar with Ford Motor Company, pursued the claim and did not, in and of themselves, find anything, apparently, in the IRAM-ERAM that they felt was compelling because it was never provided to us. And I would also touch on the quote, strongest document that was asked Mr. Miller's counsel as to what they rely on. They rely on this, quote, supervisory checklist, which actually was produced. That, it's uncontroverted, was not part of the IRAM-ERAM. In fact, it was not even in existence until months after Mr. Miller's termination. It was part of Ford's HR Online, which is a computer system that came in online after his termination. At his deposition, Mr. Miller indicated that he had no idea when he'd received this, quote, supervisory checklist, nor how he'd received it. So it's quite clear there's nothing in the record to suggest he could have relied on that statement or document. The suggestion that these declarations somehow change the landscape and create an issue of fact is just wrong. He could have 550 or 500 declarations of people providing their opinion as to what the IRM ERAM said, and I'll note that none of them quote any particular section of the document either, but merely profess an opinion as to that it changed his employment status. They can't change what the document actually says, and as Judge Buffalo indicated, their promises are vague statements which fall far short of any promise which would have changed his employment at will status.
What did Judge Buffalo do with the manual that she asked for?
Your Honor, I don't know what Judge Buffalo did with it. Are you asking whether it still exists or what she did?
Did she return it to Ford or did she hold
no.
on?
No. So I provided her a copy of the manual. I provided Mr. Miller a copy of the manual per the court's order.
And they didn't come back to you?
They have not been returned to me, and the only knowledge that I have of what Judge Buffalo did with the manual is she must have thoroughly reviewed it because she indicated that in her opinion. Let me touch also on the disclaimer because I think in and of itself is enough to warrant summary judgment. The disclaimer has been part of the IRM ERAM at least since 1969, before Mr. Miller was ever employed, and it provides in the introduction, nothing in this manual is intended to create or constitute an employment agreement with any employee. The contents of this manual shall not, under any circumstances, be deemed to be part of any employment agreement with any employee. Now, for the first time on appeal, Mr. Miller argues, well, I didn't know about the disclaimer. Not only can that issue not be raised for the first time on appeal, as this court has repeatedly ruled, it wouldn't be supported by the record even if it could. Mr. Miller, in his deposition, which is part of this record, testified that he worked with the IRM ERAM for over 10 years, that he called it his quote-unquote Bible that he used. There was never a suggestion that he was unaware of the disclaimer, nor when Ford filed its motion for summary judgment and presented the disclaimer, any contention by Mr. Miller in opposition that he didn't know about it or it was unenforceable or that it didn't apply. So I think regardless of whether there might be ambiguity, which Judge Buffalo certainly did not feel there was, nor has Mr. Miller ever produced as to what the IRM ERAM said, the disclaimer in and of itself resolve the issue, as the Illinois courts have recognized. I'm certainly happy to answer any questions that the court has, if they have any for me.
Apparently not.
Thank you,
Mr. Bledsoe. Mr. Hodge, your time expired. You have 1 minute, if you...
I have a question.
Better not waive your time, then.
Look, what I understand, so you have the manual.
Mr. Miller had the head manual. I didn't have the manual.
You have it now.
I have now, yes. I have it after I realized, I wrote the brief in this case relying on the record that was in, that I took out of the...
I understand. When you wrote the brief, you knew that Judge Bucklow had based her decision on the manual.
I'm not trying to be disingenuous about this, Judge. I should have made the motion then. There's no question about it. But I didn't, and when I was preparing for the argument in this case, I realized, oh my goodness, this should be part of the record. And I think Rule 10C-E, I think it is, provides for this kind of circumstance. And I don't think it's an imposition on the court. We're not going to give the court 3 feet of paper. It's
what gonna are you going to do?
I'm going to...
You're going to cull the passages that you think support you, and then they'll... call their passages, and then what happens?
It's a little more simple.
We have another briefing, another argument, or what?
No, Your Honor, there's a section that applies to general salary employees, and there's a disciplinary section. That's all we're going to present, except for the introduction, which Mr. Bledsoe already, it's already part of the record, as to the disclaimer. So we're not going to, Mr. Bledsoe and I are going to talk afterwards.
Is it clear, Mr. Hodge, what the parameters are of the reliance by Judge Bucklow on the document that you say is essential? I mean, can we by relying on what you say, if we accept the section that you think are critical, we can be comfortable that that embodies all that she needed to study for her decision?
I don't think she overlooked it, Your Honor. I don't know that, but I don't. I think it's just that because the court has a noble power here, we just respectfully suggest that the Judge Buffalo didn't get it right. So we just, Mr. There may be, I've looked at the 3 feet myself. I may have missed something, but I'm going to talk to counsel and see if we can get that straightened out so we won't burden the court with a bunch of back and forth.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will take a 5-minute recess before the sixth case.